Hey, listeners. This week, we're talking to Anne Bogle, author and host of the What to Read Next podcast. I am a huge fan of that pod, as you probably know, and here's part of why. When you listen to Anne and her guest talk about books they love and books they didn't, you get these short, focused insights into what makes a book really work for readers, what they remember, what was important. That helps me focus in on those things in my own work. And I use that when I'm playing with my Inside Outline, a tool from our sponsor, Author Accelerator, that also helps you narrow in on the things that pull a reader or a writer straight through any book. Find out more at authoraccelerator.com/amwriting.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. Try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag Am Writing. Hashtag Am Writing is the podcast about writing all the things under all the circumstances. Fiction, nonfiction, proposals, pitches, essays, everything you might be working on. By and large, this is the podcast, as I say every week, about sitting down and getting your work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and various write for various outlets, including The New York Times, The Atlantic, places like that. And I am just finishing up my manuscript edits on my next book, which is The Addiction Inoculation.
I am KJ Delantonia. I am the author of How to Be a Happier Parent, as well as a novel coming out this summer, The Chicken Sisters, about which I am super excited. I am also a regular contributor to the New York Times and the former editor there of the Motherload blog / Well Family. And we are delighted to welcome a guest today. Our guest today is Anne Bogle. She is most recently the author of Don't Overthink It, which came out on March 3rd, 2020. Followers of this podcast who have taken my advice may have checked out her podcast, What Should I Read Next?, where she talks books, reading, and recommendations with guests. Because, as you probably know, I am a huge fan. Anne is also the author of two other books, I'd Rather Be Reading, and Reading People, How Seeing the World Through the Lens of Personality Changes Everything. And the host of a second podcast, One Great Book, and last but not least, the blogger behind themodernmrsdarcy.com. And thank you for taking some time out of all of that to be here with us.
That did sound like a lot. When
that
you
is a lot.
All at once. And thank you. It is my pleasure.
KJ raves. She has been trying to get me to. She was on me for a long time to get me to start listening to What to Read Next, and I am now a fan. And you and KJ's pretty stoked to have you on the podcast today. I have to admit,
very much so.
Well, that's very kind, and it is so mutual.
Yes. I won't rave anymore about the podcast. I'll put it in the show notes. So we asked you here today. I feel like Peter Sagal. We've asked you here today to talk about, you know, you're an expert in the modern Mrs. Darcy. What about, never mind. If you're not a wait, don't tell me fan that segue made absolutely
that will
sense.
Make no sense, but you know.
We asked you here today to talk about genres, owning your expertise, finding your voice, and possibly, in just a little side note at the end, launching a book in a global pandemic, a problem we hope we won't have for very long. We are recording, listeners, simply for context. We're recording on March 27th, 2020. You are probably hearing this several weeks later. We don't know what the state of the world is at this time. As you're listening, and you know, if it's dramatically different than what we're talking about, cut us some slack. Our see into the future glasses were busted this day. Man, I almost feel like I could use some of those, but it might not be great.
Yeah.
All right.
Someone said to me, I was doing a podcast yesterday, and I mentioned that my husband is an infectious disease doc, and they said, well, that would either be incredibly reassuring or really, really anxiety provoking. And I said, depending on the moment of the day, it's a little of both.
I believe that.
Yeah. Well, let's get on to the stuff of our semi-normal lives. And I was hoping we could start with you telling us your writer story. Have you always been a writer? And when did you sort of set out to make it a professional gig?
I have always been a writer in some form or other, you know, like a journaler or something like that. I was not the kid who was writing, you know, novels at age 8 in her spiral-bound notebooks. I spent the decade of my 20s writing legal briefs, mostly, in an entirely different profession, and finally realized if you enjoy reading that, or if you enjoy writing that, you can clearly write anything. And it was really in my 30s that I turned to writing professionally. That began a little over 10 years ago, and I've been writing with a very different audience in mind ever since.
I don't think I knew that you were I won't say failed lawyer, but former lawyer. So am I.
No, that was my good girl act of rebellion in a family of lawyers and judges to never actually go to law school.
I see.
You know, I did the rebellious thing and became a paralegal.
Ooh. Boy. Yeah, you get a rebel t-shirt for
So at least I didn't have all the law school debt when I turned my back on it.
Did you get all the way through, Jess, and not practice, or did you?
I did. I graduated.
That's right.
I graduated, but I never took the bar, never practiced. I did the summer intern thing, but never actually practiced on my own.
Yeah.
There's a club.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I always tell kids who say, you know, I really like to write and argue, so everyone tells me to be to be a lawyer, is run away. That's exactly the advice I got. It was not good advice. Don't give it.
Oh, no.
So, you know, if you're writing legal briefs, great. But what was the first, tell us about sort of your segue into trying to find something else you could write that you could get paid for?
You know, the payment part was not on my mind when I began writing. I'm not sure if this is a good thing or a bad thing, because it would have changed the way I approached it. It might have been really intimidating as well. Really, I feel like this sounds so lowbrow, except I also love this community, but it started blogging. My husband suggested I start a blog, is a creative outlet, something for myself. I had 4 kids like you do, KJ. I mean, I still have 4 kids, but at the time the baby was, I think, 1. And everything I was doing was in the service of someone else, except for reading my own books. But it's hard. You don't really feel like you have anything to show for that that's tangible. That's all in your head, even if the benefits are very real. You can't see them. And so I started writing words on a blog that I didn't expect anybody would read, but very quickly discovered, hey, I really like this.
And when did you discover the flip side of that, which was that people really liked to read it?
When I entered blogging, I think I had this idea that everybody was writing at home in their pajamas, which may very well be true, but I didn't understand the community aspect involved. I didn't know that people read and commented. I didn't know that I'd get to know the people in my comments, and I definitely didn't expect that I would get to know the other people writing their own blogs. But I mean, very quickly, within the first 3 months, I started making those relationships and talking shop with people and realizing that there were a lot more possibilities for the future than I had ever imagined when I asked my husband to, like, okay, sure, could you set something up for me? I'll give this a try.
Listeners, the modern Mrs. Darcy's, I don't know if it's your official tagline or just what you call it, but it's a lifestyle blog for nerds. So I think we can.
That's what my
right
friend Tish does.
Down our alley.
And I kind of like that.
Right.
Yeah,
it's funny
that.
For some people when they get started blogging and the blog sort of becomes this thing you never anticipated. I mean, I've talked about this before, that when I wanted to start writing something new and my husband suggested I start writing about teaching, I was like, yeah, well, you know, maybe 3 people will ever read that. And it just sort of takes on a life of its own. And I think blogging is just the most, I think it's the most wonderful freeing thing to do because it's mainly for you.
It is. And you get to test out an idea, work it out, put it out there, see what people think, see what you think, because the work reads differently when it's published.
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
Even if that just means like you hit publish on WordPress.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, you can do it. It's not quite instant, but we've all written books. Compared to writing books, it is instantaneous. And I love that about it.
I also think it's a great way to discover that typically if you are passionate about something, there are others that are passionate about it and that share that interest and want to find you and get into it. This is something we talk about on the podcast a lot, that I think we as writers have a tendency to go, well, I need a really broad type topic so that a lot of people will be interested in it. When the truth is that sometimes the more narrow, or maybe just the more passionate you are about the specific thing, the better. Does that bring us to you and books, or you and personality types, or... I have a question around this, and I think let me back up and ask it because I think it's valuable. I'm going to wait. Everybody has to wait for my question. Wait for my question. I know you're super excited, but wait for it, because I want to back up to how did you go from I'm writing a blog to I'm going to write a book? Or was the book your first? What's the first thing you wrote for another editor?
Oh, gosh.
Of the first. Something memorable. Something that sort of marks your stage in between I write a blog for, commenters and that's what I do, into putting your words out there in that different way.
That's an interesting question, and now I'm trying to think. I know that within a few years of blogging, I was writing a lot of, because this used to be a thing, I was writing a lot of guest posts and pieces, some of which I'd think, hey, it would be great to be published on that site, and I'd write them and submit them, some of which were solicited from me. I do remember that I wrote in an anthology. I had actually forgotten all about this, even though the book is on my shelves, but two or three years into blogging, I wrote an essay for an anthology, and the editorial process was different than anything I'd been through before. I guess we could say it's a literary anthology. It was personal essay, story driven. I almost want to call it memoir, but I don't know.
What is it? I mean, accurate. You've got anthology fans on it listening and actually sitting here, so we'd like to know what it is.
I think it's called What a Woman is Worth. It was edited by, but I can't remember.
That's okay. We'll look it up.
But I remember I hadn't had this kind of work edited in this kind of way since I'd been in college. And it was a really different experience. I mean, I loved it. I love the editorial process, even when it's kicking my butt, because I firmly believe that it makes the work, whatever it is, so much better. And other people have a perspective on what's on the page that you just don't have because you're too close to it. You know too much what you wanted to say to even recognize what it says on the page. At least that's my experience. And I remember really, really appreciating that experience. But golly, it was harder than I expected because that was the first time I'd been through that in many, many years. And I was out of practice. And I think the stakes were a little higher this time. Somebody wasn't just grading papers. They were making something that they were going to sell. And that's different.
It's totally different. So how did you get from that into writing an actual book for somebody to sell?
I was aware that people who wrote words for a living in some way, shape, or form often would end up putting those words in books. The idea intrigued me, but it wasn't something that I knew I desperately had to do. But after blogging for a few years, agents started reaching out to me and asking if I'd be interested in doing that. And that got me thinking about it. And then after I think a couple years of this happening, someone approached who I thought, you know what, like I can really see myself working with that person. And that's what inspired me to take the leap. I was interested in doing it, but I didn't want to do it unless I felt like it would be worthwhile for readers, but also worthwhile for me. And the thing I was most excited about was going through the process of writing and editing. That was huge for me. And publishing a book. I thought it would make me a better writer. And that's what inspired me to say yes.
Well, one thing that's different about your experience than sort of a lot of your the people at the same time who were writing books who had started out on blogs, often they wrote books based on the blog. But that was your first book was Reading People, How Seeing the World Through the Lens of Personality Changes Everything, and I have read it and very much enjoyed it, but it is sort of a cross between a memoir of your own experience with personality tests and a discussion of all kinds of, you know, the Enneagram and the Myers-Briggs and a whole bunch of other things that you just, I take it, you were fascinated with and you thought, well, I can learn about these things and write about them. I think I will. Is that how that went? Or
I did find that topic really interesting. And I'd experienced firsthand and then seen in conversations with all these readers over the years how understanding certain things about themselves and about others, of course, really made a huge difference in their lives. And there's something special about the book format. And I thought it could be really useful to them and interesting for me to make that information available in a longer book format.
But it's not like you were a blogger on personality tests. I mean, you know, maybe you wrote about it.
No, I know what you're saying.
It's not like, you know, your blog was called, readingpeople.com or something like that. So was it hard to sell an agent and an editor on that? Was it hard to sell yourself on the idea that you could be an expert in that area?
No, it's not what I blogged about. And I hear what you're saying because so many times, I mean, I hope we're a little bit past this point, but there was a long period of time where taking a blog and basically using many, many of those posts as a foundation to become a book or turning those posts into a book was a huge trend in publishing. Lots of books were created based on that model. And that's not something I wanted to do at all. I mean, I'd already written the words. There was, and I wanted to go through the process of creating the content and making it better. So I didn't just want to source like my most popular posts and turn that into a book. Because of my platform, it was not difficult. It took me a while to figure out the kind of voice that I wanted to bring to the work, really to everything I've written. And now I can, now I know exactly what that feels like. It's the relatable expert. So I don't have a ton of letters after my name. But I do know a lot of things. And instead of writing as someone like coming at you from on high, like I have studied for 42 years and I have all the answers, I can talk to my readers as like, hey, I've been through some things. I had to learn this too. It's helped me a lot. I think it can help you. Let's talk about it together. Now I'm really comfortable in that voice, but it really took some work, one, to accept the fact that, yes, people look to me as an expert, and two, to own my expertise and not apologize it while still leaning into the relatable, the friendliness that I really like in the voices of authors I read.
That's a really real, that's something that comes up a lot when I'm talking with or reading little sample bits from nonfiction books for first-time authors especially. And my comment, you know, almost always is, no, you are the expert. You have to own this from the very beginning, because if you don't believe it, your reader is not going to believe it either. And that doesn't mean that I'm encouraging people who are overstepping to, you know, claim to have expertise they don't have. But when you're going to claim expertise in an area and you really do, you've done the research and you've been there and had the experiences, you have to own it so that your reader will believe you. And it's such a hard thing to do when unless you're feeling it yourself. And sometimes it's a process of like writing and working your way into that space and sort of convincing yourself that you're an expert.
And I think it might be the difference between being someone who likes to create things and then being someone who others are looking to for those things. And when you were describing what you tell, especially first-time authors and how they need to own their expertise, I'm also thinking of now, like I'm a business owner and for years I said, I don't want to be anybody's boss. Let's just pretend I'm not the boss. We're just going to have a working relationship. It's going to be fine. And in the same way, that doesn't do anybody any good. Like I am the boss, and being able to own that and live in that role, because people want you to live in that role if you're their boss. They really do. That was also a journey. I think it's that difference between wanting to create and then the extra job almost that being in that position of expertise or authority is. That's not what you signed up for when you thought you wanted to write a book, you know?
Right.
Or that you wanted to start writing a blog.
So do you have any sort of examples of ways that you had to change your voice, especially going back to that first, and we're going to get to Don't Overthink It, but going back to that first book, do you remember some of the ways that you had to stop yourself from going, well, you know, I read 46 things and then this expert says this and then this expert says this, so therefore I think, or anything like, what was that process like of getting, finding your inner expert?
I think a lot of this, wow, this could almost be like a therapy conversation, but I think a lot of it has to do with just as a woman in the world, not every woman does this, but I had some talks with some people who are close to me, who are very kind, but also very assertive and saying like, Anne, stop apologizing. Like, it's okay. It's okay. And I think a little bit was just not wanting to like ruffle any feathers. I didn't want to stand out. Like, I was just an introvert writing at home. I really think I just needed to wake up and stop apologizing for my presence, and also own that, yeah, I do know some things. I love to learn. I love to find out new things. I'm always looking to experts. And I think it just had never occurred to me that I could be one of them. I was younger at the time too. And I think that was part of it. So a little bit growing up, a little bit stop apologizing, and a little bit realizing like, yeah, if you're writing this because you feel like you have something valuable to offer, then that means you have something valuable to offer.
So was it easier this time?
Yes. I mean, like anything, it becomes a habit. The actions associated to that kind of mindset become a habit, and my mental habits are very different now than they were then.
So in between Don't Overthink It, which is your current book, and which is also, so you actually coined, I was listening to you talk about your books either on your podcast or possibly somewhere else, and you coined a term for the genre, which I have now forgotten what it is. It's not self-help, it's go.
I don't know. I don't like the term self-help, so I talk about personal growth books a lot.
That's it, personal growth books.
But yeah. I didn't think I made that up.
Well, you might not have, but I hadn't.
No, I love, there's a great line actually from the movie When Harry Met Sally, and Carrie Fisher turns to Meg Ryan and she looks over at Harry, who's kind of in over across the bookstore, and she said, "Someone's staring at you from personal growth."
Maybe that's where my subconscious got it from. I love it.
So in between your two personal growth books is more as a more memoiry book about your reading life. How is your voice different in that one? How was that different, a different experience of writing?
I felt like for that one, I still needed to be very precise with my words, because every word counts. Every word is a tool. And I labor over every word, but I was laboring over them for different reasons. I wanted to be clear in my meaning in that book, but it was more about crafting words that generated a certain experience in the reader and not making sure that the information they were getting was exactly right. There's a lot more fun and flexibility in that one, and a lot more just making it up out of my head instead of, let's make sure we're relaying these facts about the world and your mind and your body and your place in it to the reader.
Well, let me shift gears and take advantage of the fact that we have someone who has spent months, more than a year, thinking and writing and researching the topic of Don't Overthink It, and see if you have any advice for all of us writers sitting here wildly overthinking what's coming next.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah, it's so true. These are circumstances that we have certainly not seen in my lifetime before. That's true for most of us, I think. And it's not easy. I found right off the bat that I was relying heavily on what I learned in writing this book to make big decisions right when COVID-19 started exploding. I needed to cancel my book tour fairly early because we didn't cancel it all in one go. because at first it was very unclear which direction we were going, but I really relied on principles I learned in the process, especially about how to make decisions, that really helped me make difficult decisions right off the bat about canceling events. When we needed to do this, it was early in March. There were no shelter-in-place orders. Airline flights were still decently full at the time we made the decision, and we got a lot of pushback from some quarters for canceling events when everything still looked more or less fine. But I'm so glad. I mean, it ended up being the right thing. Like 9 days later, when those events were actually happening, we looked at each other in my house going, can you believe that there was any question that it wasn't the right thing to do to call those? So I didn't anticipate needing to rely on those principles in the course of my book being launched to roll back all our events. But yeah, I found that there are countless opportunities for overthinking now, because of course there are. I mean, we all have the opportunity to refresh the New York Times or CNN or Twitter feed or wherever we're getting information numerous times per day. We're just consuming all this information that isn't helping us unless we are an infectious disease doctor or an epidemiologist. In my house recently, we were joking that I've started referring to my favorite epidemiologists on a regular basis, which is just not words I anticipated using.
Everyone should have their favorite epidemiologists. We have we have portraits of them painted in our house.
I would very much like to see those. But I mean, yeah, I have been implementing the strategies nonstop that I tried to teach other people in my book. Like, what do you do if your brain gets stuck on the bad stuff? And that's not the only thing I talk about in Don't Overthink It. Like, one of the huge things I really wanted to include in this book that's not in any of the books I saw out there was how to not only not think yourself into unhappiness, but how to actively think yourself into happiness. That was really important to me. But that's not the part the whole world is thinking about right now. What we're thinking about is, what do you do if your brain gets stuck on the bad stuff and sucked into, hey, we're facing a global pandemic, and even though everything is pretty okay in my family situation right now, like, what if it goes south real fast and it's like we're living in the stand? Here are some of the strategies I've been relying on. First of all, pay attention to your thoughts, because you can't change anything until you notice you're doing it. If you don't realize you're overthinking and making yourself cranky and miserable, you can't stop. So just check in and say, like, are these mental processes at work in my brain right now serving me well or not? And if they're not, there are things you can do. Something really helpful to do is to look for the good. When you're ruminating, your brain is stuck in a negative thought spiral. And if you can practice the creative exercise of seeking another way to look at the situation, you can snap yourself out of it. You can do this by practicing gratitude or asking yourself simple questions like, if I like the situation, what would I like about it? For example, my family of six has been home together all the time, minus walking the dog, for a week. If I liked that situation, what might be nice about that? Something else that I've used all the time is when your brain is stuck, move your body. We have walked my dog a lot. That is not an accident. It's because there's no refresh button on her leash. And so getting outside gives me a literal change of scenery. And it helps break my temptation to, embrace gloom and doom scenarios, wonder what will happen if my kids don't go back to school until 2023, all that stuff. Oh, and finally, distraction is a huge tool. I think this is why we're all... my kids are playing Wii, but also stress baking is a real thing. And I think the reason is distraction works. Your mind can only do so many things at once. So if you're making sure you get the right amount of baking soda, not baking powder, and turn on the oven and mix it properly, there's not room for that overthinking to set in. You don't have to be a baker. You could read a book or call a friend, do a puzzle, play 8 minutes of Tetris, anything, but distraction really does work when it comes to like writing out the craving to overthink.
I have been trying to notice any time that my brain is not worrying around on this and figure out what I was doing and then do more of that, whatever it was. It's a variety of things, and some of them are surprising, but like yoga is not helpful.
Mine has
really, really hard yoga in which I'm trying to do the crow pose. That is helpful. So I'm sort of seeking out stuff that before I was sort of less likely to turn to.
Yeah.
I've found outside to be huge. Outside has been an incredible escape for me, and the weather is just starting to turn, which is great up here in Vermont. But I also found that my audiobook listening has really turned towards, you know, I want plots that grab me and hold on and take me away somewhere else. And that's been wonderful between the outside and really engaging audiobooks. That's what's helping me sort of put some distance between myself and the news and, you know, checking Twitter constantly.
Yeah. And two things specifically for writers. It's funny. Something that I talk about in the book is how I have a mantra from Wallace Stegner's book, Crossing to Safety, that I repeat a lot to myself when I'm writing and it's hard and it's not coming. And that is that hard writing makes for easy reading. So when I'm tempted to argue with myself and be like, oh, this is crap. Do you know what you're doing? Or these days, is there even going to be a publishing industry? And is anybody going to buy this? You know, it's okay for the writing process to be hard, but you got to brush those thoughts aside and think, you know, like I'm doing the work. My butt is in the chair. I'm focused on my project. It just doesn't matter right now. I'm not worrying about that right now. I am writing. And also, I think since so many of us writers typically work from home or a home-like situation, I think it's easy to think, well, our experience has not changed. I should be able to carry on as usual. But we're all under a lot of stress right now, and we're all grieving a lot of weird things. And if we don't acknowledge that and lower our expectations for our output, we're just going to be really unhappy. And we're not going to get as much done. It's bad for productivity, and it's bad for the soul. If you are a writer who is fueled by this whole situation, like, more power to you. But that is not most of us. Just acknowledging this is the reality that we're in. And yeah, it's going to make a difference in how I work, even if physically my work hasn't changed, is really important if we're going to remain happy, healthy, productive writers. Not that we're necessarily all happy when we're writing or healthy when we're writing, but
we're trying.
But we're just going to make things worse. Yeah, we are trying.
Well, last speed segue, because we are definitely coming to the end of the time that we usually spend with our guests, which is sad. Just tell us a little bit about transitioning your book tour from, I mean, you had so many awesome live things planned. And, you know, I know that a lot of them are canceled. All of them. Everything is canceled, as you say at the top of your blog. Tell us about how you've transitioned into doing other things and what some of the, give us some successes, please. Take us out on a high note.
Well, I hope that we are postponed and not canceled, but we're crossing our fingers and watching the news, but hopefully not too much, just like everybody else. We've tried to make the best of it without being all Pollyanna-ish. I do run in that lengthy list of things you read that I did that just kind of made me tired, honestly. I run a space online called the Modern Mrs. Darcy Book Club, where it's a member community, and we do bookish conversation. We have a community of literary loving people. We do regular classes and author conversations. So we have this platform in place. We pay the big bucks every month for our online streaming services, like Zoom and et cetera, all those work from home tools people are using now. And, we know how to do this. So we created a stay at home book tour that is hopefully providing a nice boost of morale and some needed bibliotherapy to readers out there, and hopefully giving an opportunity to replicate what's so nice about the independent bookstore, free in-person book tour events that authors so frequently participate in when they do have a new book coming out or a new edition like a paperback release. So we just finished our first week of that as we're speaking now. We've been hosting authors whose book tours and launches were massively disrupted or are being disrupted by the coronavirus. And we hope that we're providing a little bit of bookish delight to readers who are going through hard things. I mean, we don't kid ourselves that books are the answer to everything, but like they sure help, especially if you are someone who loves books and reading. So I feel like we all need to do what we can right now. I'm not an infectious disease specialist, but I hope I can bring some literary joy to readers when they are you know, sheltering in place, stuck at home right now.
That's the important stuff right now.
Yeah. It sounds to me like when you started seeing your book events be postponed, instead of wallowing in that, you thought, how can I help others as well as help myself? And I love that. You know, speaking, that's it's just a great approach in general. So if listeners, if you want to check out what Anne is doing, and again, you know, we're recording this before you're going to hear it, but head over to themodernmrsdarcy.com, take a look, check out the book club, you know, see what they're doing, and if you're interested, and or if it might apply to you, it's a fun place to be. Well, this is a good moment to transition into what we've been reading.
Who's going to go first?
Who's going to go first? Anne is going to go first because guests always go first. Actually, it's not true, but.
Well, I will confess, I have been accumulating a nice stack of heavy-hitting, humanity-probing literary novels for some time on my nightstand. I've been looking forward so much to reading them, and now I don't want to touch them with a 10-foot pole. I hope this feeling passes.
Thank you, because if you had gone the other way with that sentence, I was going to crawl under my desk. And I'm so delighted to have the opportunity to dig into them right now. Okay.
No, I mean, I've been so excited. Like, the new James McBride is here, and the new, or soon to be new, Imbolo Mbu. I can't wait to read those books, except now I have them, and yeah, I don't want to touch them. And I will. Here's where I am in my life right now. So every year for Modern Mrs. Darcy, we put out this big summer reading guide, and I read all the things and share like 25 to 30 novels that I think would be, if you like are into my stuff and if you know my taste, these are books I'm really excited about, and I think you might be too. And I like put some heavy in there with the light, and I need to read those. But oh, recently it's just been like, give me all the light-hearted, hopeful, lovey-dovey, easy breezy fiction I can find. I mean, I've been devouring like rom-coms so hard. I felt like I was really going in a heavy direction when I picked up the new Jennifer Weiner last night. Like, this is where I am.
Yeah, that's an emotional stretch there. That's awesome.
So, okay, so two specific ones. I just finished the new Amy Poppel. On that note, it's called Musical Chairs. And like, yeah, the characters are dealing with some hard things, but they're not. It's mostly like a fun and funny dysfunctional family dramedy. And I enjoyed it so much. Although I got to tell you, it's set in Connecticut, at someone's country home. And there was a moment when they're like, let's drive into the city for the day. And I was like, oh, don't do that. You don't need to go to New York.
Stop.
It's fine. It's fine. Stay where you are. So it was interesting to note how quickly my brain has like adapted to the current circumstances and was reacting. And I've been reading like all the fun romancy kind of books, like The Flatshare from Beth O'Leary, was the British author, was really popular last year as a romantic comedy. And she has a new book out called The Switch that features an 80-year-old protagonist along with a younger, I think 30-ish protagonist. And it was just sweet and fun and a little bit silly. And that's what I've really been wanting to read these past couple weeks.
I love that. Well, that's the direction that my book of the week, if you will, goes in as well. And I've also been genre hopping. I'm like, I don't want to read the stuff that I normally read for whatever reason. So I bought this before all this happened, and I do like science fiction, but it's not something I really turn to a lot. Anyway, I have been reading The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet by Becky Chambers, and it's so much fun. It's basically, if you're saying, no, I don't read, you know, books with planets in the title. I don't read space sagas. I don't read things about people who live on spaceships, but you're willing to watch them on TV, then this is the book for you, because it's very episodic in its arcing, which is fun. And then, I mean, what it really is a look at how, we won't say humans because they're not all. A look at how various sapient individuals find ways to deal with the ways that others are different from them and live together. And who couldn't use that? Heck, that's a little closer to home than it maybe than I had realized as I think about it, because I got a lot of sapient individuals living in this house and trying to figure out how to deal with our differences at the moment. Anyway, that one's super fun. All right. I'm going to bet Jess is not reading Light.
No, I am actually. I was doing Escapist. I read that a couple podcast episodes ago. I think I talked about the whale book that I was reading and stuff like that. But I got a book that I had picked up at the bookstore and left behind, but then realized that the bookstores in Vermont were probably going to have to close soon. And so I ordered it from the Vermont Bookshop down in Middlebury. And I went down to pick it up. You know, they have like curbside service kind of thing where you order it and pay for it. And then you knock on the door and they bring it out to you. And I was one of the last books she handed over before they had to close. And it was just really sad. But the book I got is really good. And it's called Wild Horses of the Summer Sun. And it's a memoir of Iceland. And it's about the Icelandic pony. And it's by someone named Tori Bilski. And I'm really enjoying that so far. And then I have to say my escapist book, while it's not a rom-com, it's the new Harlan Coben. It's called The Boy from the Woods. And Harlan Coben pulls me in, keeps me in, and sticks the landing every time. And you know how pissed off I get when people don't stick the landing. Yes. So this book has been, it sucked me in right away. It's really unusual. Like one of the main characters is highly unusual, and I'm willing to just go with it because I know at some point being patient with his storytelling is going to pay off, because it always does. And so I'm absolutely loving The Boy from the Woods. It just came out, I think, last week. So yeah, I highly recommend that. But KJ, I think you're going to love the Icelandic Ponies book, and I'm going to save that for you.
Awesome.
When I'm done with it.
That is a pleasure. Yeah. Well, just a reminder to everybody that if you're in need of reading materials, your independent bookstores are in need of you. However, I don't know where you are, but it is true that ours here today is the last day of the curbside delivery. They are switching to online ordering through their website. They have free shipping. They're going to be doing everything they can to fulfill as fast. And Amazon's not fulfilling overnight anymore either, people. So, you know, take a moment, wait a couple days for your book. That's one of the many, many, many sucky lessons of this experience, is that maybe we don't get to have everything immediately anymore. But that's okay, right? We'll settle for having it at all.
Yeah, I actually have been digging back through my shelves and looking to see, okay, well, let's make a stack from stuff I already own. Novel idea. Those books that I already own, and I'll pull those back out.
I'm hoping to make some good progress on mine.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for us this week. As always, a reminder that if you would like to see the show notes for this episode, you can find them at it's amwritingpodcast.com. We welcome your support. If you want to sign up there, you can sign up to support this podcast via a small, I don't know that donation is the right word for it, but in any case, we are always excited to have help with production costs. But you can also sign up there just to receive our weekly email, in which we include the show notes and all the links to all the books that we have talked about. And you can find more about our guest at themodernmrsdarcy.com. I would definitely encourage you to pick up her book, Don't Overthink It. Again, from an indie, if you can bear to wait, and okay, fine, Kindle it if that's what works for you. And you check out her podcast, please. What Should I Read Next is great fun, and definitely a lovely escape that will leave you lighter in the wallet and with a lot of books on order.
It definitely expands the to read list, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, until next week, everyone. Keep your butts in the chair and your heads in the game.
The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perilla. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Okay. save. Pause. Stop. Stop.
Thank you.